Welcome now to the Midday for a Wednesday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and in case you've just joined us, Stephen Huff is with me today. We got a little bit of an early start because he got here early, and so why not put him to work? Put him right to work. And he'll be performing with the Madison Symphony this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 7:30, 8 o'clock, and 2:30, respectively, in a program that includes Samuel Barber's second essay, Tchaikovsky's sixth symphony, and then the Saint-Saëns Egyptian concerto, the fifth of his five piano concertos. Welcome again, Stephen.
Thank you, Norman. Thanks.
Still a pleasure having you here. And we were talking a little bit about the exoticism of Saint-Saëns, who enjoyed North Africa so much. And there's another piece, in addition to the concerto that he wrote, inspired by North Africa.
There is. It's just called Africa. And it's a piece of piano and orchestra. I'm not sure the exact timing. Is it about 10 minutes, something like that, roughly?
Well, that's 9:47.
And in a way, it's even more exotic than the Egyptian concerto, because it's all about Africa, although it's only about North Africa. It's French Africa. It's that whole world of, you know, Algeria and Tunisia and all of that that period.
So what makes it so hard to play?
It's very tricky with the orchestra. He has these wonderfully exotic rhythms, offbeat things, strange harmonies. It's an absolutely fantastic piece. And I've never played it in concert, actually. Maybe at some point in the future I might. But it requires a lot of rehearsal for 10 minutes. And, of course, I came from Puerto Rico yesterday. I'm not sure that the Madison Symphony would bring me all the way just to play for 9 minutes, 47 seconds and then go back home to London. But still, it's a fantastically concentrated piece, and I think it's not played nearly enough.
That's an interesting point, isn't it, though? There are practicalities behind orchestral programs. It's not as if the orchestra and the solos can just play whatever they feel like, and so a short piece that's so intense and so demanding is not likely to turn up on a concert program.
That's right, although there's been a lot of talk. I wrote an article about this a little while ago, and also I've seen other people talking about this, about the different lengths of concert programs. Do they really need to be, 45 minutes first half, 20-minute intervals, 45 minutes second half? Is that really how it always has to be? And I know that the LA Phil have their Friday rush time concerts, which I think begin at 7 and last for 1 hour, and then you're out. No interval. And
the London Symphony. They're quite successful.
They're very successful. They're called casual concerts, I think. And then the London Symphony are thinking of doing this, I think, starting at 6:30. Again, 1 hour of music. So I don't know what you would do with this present program. Maybe you could just do the Saint-Saëns and the Tchaikovsky. It would be a little bit more than an hour. But so in that kind of context, maybe pieces like the Strauss Burlesque or the Saint-Saëns Africa or the symphonic variations of Franck could have a place. Pieces that don't quite fit the length requirement. Or the Weber Concertstück, a piece that I love. And I have played quite a bit as a companion piece to something else.
Yes, it does after a while boil down to arithmetic, doesn't it?
Yes.
How long is it? We will, I guess, indulge ourselves and hear the entire Africa Fantasy, which is, after all, only 10 minutes. And this is a performance that is part of a complete piano and orchestra works of Saint-Saëns that you recorded 2000 and 2001.
Yeah.
And the orchestra for the occasion, City of Birmingham Symphony?
Yes, a wonderful, wonderful orchestra with an amazing list of conductors. I mean, before Zachary Arama, who conducts this particular performance, it was Simon Rattle's orchestra. And then when Zachary left, it became Andras Nelson's orchestra, who's now, of course, in Boston Symphony, and so on. It's got this amazing track record of taking unknown young conductors and discovering that they're the next great conductors.
Well, so. Zachary Arama, they ran through his paces then, just with Africa alone. Here it is. The pianist is Stephen Huff.
Thank you.
Well, it's got it all, doesn't it? It does have that wonderful North African sound to it, and a bit of virtuosity required.
Yeah, I'm just listening to that and thinking there were many, many hours when I could have been out in the garden sipping on a glass of white wine, and I was inside working away on those double thirds and those chromatic scales. But it's a fun piece. And you can hear the sort of player that Saint-Saëns was, I think, from that. We have a few recordings from the very, very earliest days of acoustic recording, 1904 and 06. I think he made a few records. He was, I think, in his 60s or 70s by then.
He lived till 1921, so yeah. He still had a lot of years left.
But he was such a beautiful player. Fast, very, that wonderful light kind of French, you know, the country that gave us the greatest meringues. And you hear that very much in his playing.
With just a splash of wine, perhaps, yeah.
Yes.
Well, do you ever regret at all, Stephen Huff, by the way, my guest, in case you're just joining us, letting these pieces go and as the pianists say, you know, losing them from your fingers?
Not at all, no. I mean, this is a piece that I haven't played since that recording. I never played it in concert, and that recording is, what, 2000 or 2001? Mm-hmm. So I'm a different person now. I have a different priorities and interests and so on, but I'm glad that we did record it. It's nice to hear it and remember looking back. It's a little bit like life. You know, you look back and you have certain regrets you might have. But I think you can also look back with a certain affection on a different time of your life and yet still not want to go back and relive those years.
Well, and you are, as they say, a man of many parts, which must make it even more difficult to keep up on things in that you're a polymath. You are a painter. You're a novelist. You certainly write plenty of nonfiction, too, in addition to being this, you know, world-class, much-recorded, very well-traveled pianist. So how's there ever time for the garden?
Oh, well, I don't have time for the garden, but I do have time when I'm traveling, a lot of dead time. Yesterday was a sort of travel day coming from Puerto Rico. I spent time, you know, working on the flight. It's possible to do things on those sort of days. And I don't generally watch movies on planes. I try and read instead or write or do things. And I find that passes the time actually much more efficiently. So, but no, gardening, not much time for that. Or much of a garden. I live in the center of London, so...
I imagine it would be room for a couple of radishes.
Yes.
Well, what about the painting? And how do these things tie in, do you think, with music?
Well, music and words and the writing of them is very central to what I do. Painting is something that I do really when I'm just, after a frustrating day practicing, when I've been working on Africa and it doesn't seem to be any better, I'm still at the south point of Spain, I haven't got there yet, then I might paint just to relax. And I throw paint on the canvas in a wonderfully liberating, haphazard, crazy sort of way.
So it's abstract painting?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I just have lots of fun. But I really enjoy it. And when I say I don't take it seriously, but it's something that I find is a very passionate thing to do. I find that my heart beats fast when I'm painting. I really enjoy it in that way. I find it exhilarating.
And do you ever, once you've created these paintings, see patterns emerging that you weren't aware of in terms of what they say about you as an artist or a person?
Well, I like color. I think I'm wearing some colorful,
splashy shirt, yes.
So that's part of it. I mean, I think it relates to music in the sense that I also am very interested in texture. I love transparency at the piano. The piano, it's possible to play the piano, and in fact, it's easy to play the piano in a very thick, opaque kind of way. The pedal is not very refined, but the pedal can be used on 8 different levels, the right pedal, of creating different sounds, and I love working with that, and I spend a huge amount of my practice time working on texture. I like to be able to hear all the parts. There's never such a thing as a chord. There are always notes in a chord which are more important than other notes. If you have a 4-part chord, those 4 notes will each be a different dynamic level.
No kidding.
And
boy,
so
that must take some
it's
effort.
A lifetime of work, all of that. And so that's somehow related to painting, because in my paintings there are usually many layers of paint, and I'll have a beginning splash, and then I'll work on top of that, on top of that, on top of that. And so that's something that I like to see in other people's paintings too, that kind of sense of texture and richness in what's behind what you see.
Well, I didn't mention that you're also a composer. It would almost, I'm tempted to say it would almost follow naturally, but I suppose there must be a lot of performers who aren't composers. But you are...
Well, these days, most, but in the past, none. until really the 1940s or so, every performer composed, I think. I can't think of one who didn't.
It does seem a natural thing. That is a kind of like watching dancers dance. You sort of just feel the impulse to do it yourself.
Yeah. Or readers write.
Yes.
You know, I think there's most of us will have read something and thought, well, I'd like to write too if we enjoy reading.
I could do better than this.
Well, sometimes that can be true. I've written in the last 10 years or so a lot of serious music and a number of song cycles and a couple of masses and four piano sonatas. But I think we're going to hear two pieces that are from before that time, which are in a way my toe-dipping stage when I was seeing, you know, what I could do. And these were pieces written for friends, little based on the letters of their names, actually, just as little birthday gifts. And it was once these pieces started to... I recorded them on this CD, and once people started to like them and want more, then I started to think, well, maybe I can write more serious pieces. So these are very light works. Valse Enigmatique. Enigmatique because there are lots of little references in there which are kind of not spoken about. So a bit like the Enigma Variations of Elgar. That's the connection there. But also Schumann, who loved to write pieces where the actual notes represented letters and people's
A-S-C-H,
names, A-S-C-H, the places where people lived. And of course, B-A-C-H was very common for many composers, for Bach. And so these two pieces were... And there are now a dozen of these Valse Enigmatique, but these are just the two that were recorded.
By Stephen Huff, composer and pianist.
Thank you.
some lovely things going on there.
Thank you.
The two, Valse Enigmatique. You have to kind of build up to that, saying that. Valse Enigmatique by Stephen Huff, who's been my guest today. We'll have our quiz question, and then just another minute or two with Mr. Huff. We'll be having hearing from one of the pieces we've talked about earlier that he's going to be playing this weekend with the Madison Symphony. So we're going to hold on to Mr. Stephen Huff for about another 60 seconds. He's got a busy day ahead of him and a busy weekend, what with playing the Saint-Saëns Egyptian Concerto with the Madison Symphony this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But you mentioned sort of the color and the texture and even the ragtime in the finale of the so-called Egyptian Concerto by Saint-Saëns. And so what else is going on in this final movement we're going to be hearing?
Well, it's a big romp, basically. It's just full of fireworks. It's Saint-Saëns, the great virtuoso, because he was a great pianist. He wasn't as extravagant and exuberant as Liszt in his own way, or as creative. He was much more French, much more refined and restrained. But he could let his fingers rip, and he allows me and whoever's playing this piece to do that in the last moment. It's also got some wonderful tunes. There's apparently the middle section is inspired by a boat trip on the Nile where the waters get a bit choppy. So whether you can find where that moment is
Look
when they
the
almost
water.
Capsize, but no, they end up being on the straight and narrow into the final finish.
Here it is, Stephen Huff with the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra and the final movement of Saint-Saëns' Egyptian Concerto. Thank you. That's the finale of the final piano concerto by Saint-Saëns, piano concerto number 5 in F, the Egyptian concerto. Stephen Huff, the pianist, City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, Zachary Aramo, the conductor for the occasion, and that's one of the pieces the Madison Symphony will be performing this weekend. And the program also includes the big 6th symphony, the last symphony of Tchaikovsky, and the second essay for orchestra by Samuel Barber.